All right, if you're anything like me, you hate running out of food on a trip. It's like a big fear. And so I'm a big fan of snacks during an adventure. And one of my absolute favorite go-to snacks are Wonderful Pistachios. You may be familiar with pistachios and the brand Wonderful Pistachios, but if you're not, they are one of the highest protein nuts out there. 1 ounce serving of Wonderful Pistachios is 6 grams of protein. That's 10% of your daily value. It also includes 9 essential amino acids, and they come with a ton of different flavors, varieties. There's a spicy version, there's lightly salted, there's no salted, there's so many. And every time I go on an adventure, I'm not even lying, I take an entire bag with me. And what's cool too, I love having the Wonderful Pistachio in shell, because then that almost gives me something to do and focus on as I'm paddling or biking through the really monotonous parts of the adventure. Every great adventure is going to have plenty of boring moments, and it's nice to have something to do and also something that is giving you some fuel, like Wonderful Pistachios. So they're one of my favorite adventure snacks, favorite road trip snacks, and definitely leave me feeling better than a lot of other snacks you can turn to. So if you want to learn more about how to fuel your next adventure with Wonderful Pistachios, go to WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hey folks, welcome to the Adventure Sports Podcast. I'm your host, Mason. You know, something we hear a lot with adventures is, you know, when people get back from their trip, there's obviously always this fear going into taking on a big challenge. But one of the lessons, and we've heard this literally hundreds of times on the show, is that the world is safer than you realize. People are friendlier than you realize. 99% of people are amazing. It's one or two small incidents per trip that are not even great. We just heard that from Madison Blagden last week. We've heard that from countless other guests who have done long, long journeys. And today we're going to be talking to Daniel, who made an entire adventure focused on that and decided to capture it in film. And his idea, crazy idea, very crazy idea, was to bike across the U.S. twice without food or money and rely solely on the kindness of strangers. And I know what you might be thinking, like, oh, this guy's just, you know, freeloading, trying to get a free trip or whatever it is. But you'll realize there's a lot of work and a lot of intention with how he approached it and made this beautiful documentary about how we are all in this together, this life. And that's actually the name of the documentary. We are all in this together. And it is streaming on Amazon Prime, Apple TV, Google Play. There is a link to it in the show notes. It's weareallinthistogethermovie.com. And what he's captured, his glasses have cameras in it, and he's captured his interaction with people. He's holding up signs and trying to get people to help him and hearing their stories and piecing it together to make this beautiful film. He covers 7,000 miles, 19 states, and the lessons learned and the experiences had are, you know, life-changing. So I thought this was a really, you know, wild idea. I've always thought about what it would be like to do something like this. I've heard people doing things like this, but it's really really amazing to sit down and talk to somebody who's actually done it and who's actually learning about this side of humanity and this side of society and sharing it with the world. So I encourage you to give the film a watch after this. And thanks so much for checking it out. And thank you, Daniel, for being on the show. But yeah, audio sounds good, by the way. So I think we'll just be ready to roll.
Awesome.
All right, folks. Welcome to the Adventure Sports Podcast. Today, we have Daniel Troia. You heard a little about him in the intro, but I want to welcome Daniel to the show. How you doing?
Thank you, Mason. Super stoked to be here with you. And I was just before we started the episode, we were talking about I was riding my bike across Europe last summer. And I was looking for a podcast that would give me some inspiration and kind of get me into the adventure. And I came across your podcast. So, yeah.
Did it work or did you turn it off?
Absolutely. Yeah. Like you were saying, I listened to the Ryan Van Duder, like you called him, the OG of bike touring, one of the OGs. And it got me super excited and just kind of in the moment. So, yeah, I'm happy to be here.
We hear from listeners sometimes that are like, hey, I'm stuck in a bus going across the Sahara and it's hot. And I'm looking for a community of people to know that I'm not alone doing this stuff and to know that I'm not the only crazy one. Because a lot of times with our guests, they're the only ones in their family or their friends group. Or I know that was the case for me. Like I was a total outlier, like total black sheep of the family. And it gets lonely. And then you find a community, you know, this was with anything. And it's like, oh my gosh, you know, I'm where I need to be because there's other people out there doing the same thing or doing something similar. And so I'm glad the show helped a little bit.
Definitely. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I was just listening to one of your previous podcasts, the woman who was a firefighter. She's a badass.
Oh, you know? And Caroline Paul.
Caroline Paul. Yeah. And you were talking about at the end of the episode, you were talking about how it's good to invite people, you know, it's all about the invitation, invite people to come along with you on these adventures. That's how it gets going. You know, if you have friends that are interested in getting in adventures, they don't know where to start. Well, invite them, maybe start off with something small. And then from there you can gradually build. Cause I think sometimes it can be overwhelming. Cause especially like when you hear about these insane epic adventures people are going on, you might think, well, shoot, I can't do that. But you know, maybe you can have a much smaller portion of that adventure, you know, instead of taking 7 months and biking across America, you can do, you know, you can do a week bike tour, or maybe even a weekend bike tour, you know?
I think invite's so important, man. Just an invitation to go camping, go out for a ride, even for a day. And then people's imagination will start taking over and their confidence builds. That's awesome. So I forgot to ask this. Where are you coming from?
I'm in Monterey, California. It's on the central coast of California, kind of by like Santa Cruz, if you've heard of Santa Cruz.
Oh, yeah. Big fan of Monterey, near Big Sur. Beautiful area.
Man.
I mean, that's like...
I'm heading out to Big Sur today after the podcast, man. I'm going on a hike out there. I'm so stoked, man.
I am jealous. That is like one of the places that I'm like, man, that's heaven on earth right there, Big Sur.
Yeah, I feel so fortunate just to be able to hop in the car real quick and just to head out there. So looking forward to it.
So is that home?
Yeah, Monterey's home for me. Yeah, yeah. I spend the last 10 years I've been spending my summers in Switzerland. I got this opportunity to work on a farm on this tiny village in the Swiss Alps. And what I do is, yeah, it's pretty sweet, man. I met this family 10 years ago. It's only like 100 people in the village. And I stay in the attic and we just make hay all summer and I spend my free time, you know, I bring my bike usually. So I ride up the mountain passes and then like, or I'll go hiking and stuff. And it's super special experience, man. And like, they don't speak English or anything. So I have this, I speak a little bit of German, but it's enough to get by. And it's a really awesome experience. And just, that's what I usually do during my summertime.
I saw some video of that from your biking across Europe, some of the clips on Instagram, and I'm like, that looks like a postcard, man. I mean, it might be one of the most picturesque things I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Yeah, it's hard to put into words the beauty of that. And then also just the people I live with, man, they're so kind and generous, and they live such a simple life that's not filled with materialism, you know, and like they really focus on their community. They grow their own food and they're outside being active. You know what I mean? They're not on their phones, and everybody in the village lives to be like in their 90s. And I think there's something there, man.
So where did all this start for you? Was this documentary or the adventure that started this doc? Was this like your first big adventure?
This was I rode my bike across Europe when I was across America when I was 28. The funny story about that, my goal was to get from Portland to New York City, and literally when I left Portland, I had never even camped in my entire life ever. Like, I'd never even slept in a tent.
Camp that night.
Exactly. Yeah. And also, I'd never ridden more than 25 miles on my bicycle.
Oh my gosh.
And I remember leaving Portland, Oregon, and thinking, like, I have no idea what I'm doing at all. But the funny thing is it was exhilarating because everything was so stimulated and it was so new. The whole process was so new. And just like we were saying a couple minutes ago, is you just got to just take that first step. Or like in my case, it was that first pedal, and then you're doing it, you know? And like you were saying, it doesn't always have to be super planned, but then you just pick up things along the way, you become more comfortable. And that, yeah, I spent 3 months riding my bike across America, and that's really where I started to open my eyes to different adventures and different experiences. And since then, I've been chasing that kind of high that you get from just having unpredictable situations when you're on an adventure.
Wow. You know, I always tell people this, you know, you have an idea like, okay, I'm going to ride from Portland to New York, and you think your mind like, okay, here, you know, here's going to be the highlights, or here's going to be the things, the memories, or you start kind of almost planning what to expect, unless you're very intentional about not setting expectations. But then in reality, the things you remember, the moments, the people, it's just so random. Like, it's things you could never plan. That's how just all the variables work all day long to make the most wild situations happen. And those end up being your stories. And you could never predict them beforehand. Like, it's like the weather. Like, it's just unpredictable. And
exactly.
But you've got to have that framework in place of getting here to there by bike. So how did that first night of camping go? It had to be a learning curve.
You know, it's funny. So I was trying to set up my tent, and I'm like, man, I think my tent's broken or something. And then I realized after like 10 minutes, I was putting the rain fly over the tent poles. Like, I didn't even actually set up the actual tent. Like, I didn't know the difference between a rain cover and the actual tent. You know, so it took me a little while, but eventually I was able to fall asleep.
You figured it out, though. Like, that's what's important.
Exactly.
Is like, you don't need to be an expert in everything to go.
Exactly.
And I mean, you didn't even know how to set up a tent. That's pretty outrageous right there. Like, that's extreme. And still, you did it. Like, you made it happen. So imagine the people listening that are like, oh, well, I know how to set up a tent. Well, then you were better prepared than Daniel.
Exactly.
And he did it. So that means you could do it, too. So I want to hear about the idea to not bring food or money.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I'd say like, yeah, a little while back, I had a friend give me a book called The Kindness of Strangers. And it was about a guy who hitchhiked across America in the mid-90s, and he chose to do it without bringing any food or money with him. And the book was just filled with all these like super amazing stories about the people he met and just like the unpredictable lifestyle that it caused for him. And after reading that book, I felt so inspired, man. And I thought, I would love to do something similar, but I would like to ride my bike across the country and do it. Because when you're on a bike, I mean, you really get to feel the land that you're riding through. You know, you're outside, you're breathing in the air, like you can smell the areas you're going through. It helps you connect with the land. When you're riding over the mountains, you really get to know the mountains because you're working to get over them, right? And the other thing, too, is when you're on a bike, it attracts curiosity when you have your bags and stuff, right? And your sleeping bags and your panniers. So when you're riding to town, people are curious about you. And so you have all these, like, opportunities to connect with people in the communities, right? And so I thought, man, I would love to do that with no food or money. And then I thought, I would love to make a documentary about it. But the main issue was I was thinking, how do I film this documentary? Because I don't want them to know I'm making a documentary in the moment, right? And so what I did was I had a sign that said, biking across country, ran out of food, anything helps. And then I had hidden camera glasses to capture the interactions that I had with the people that I met, you know? And so if I was fortunate to receive help from somebody, I'd ask them, I'd say, hey, do you have a story about when somebody helped you when you really needed it? And that's how I started collecting stories from the people that I met.
No kidding. So they didn't even know they were being filmed.
Exactly. They had no idea because I wanted to make it as genuine and also as raw as possible so that the viewers felt like they were there with me filming this documentary, because the fact that if there was no crew, it was just me. I wanted to really have the viewers immerse themselves in my experience.
How do you start without food or money? Like, that's like the first thing you got to figure out is how do I get food? What was like your thoughts going into it of how you would figure that out?
So before I left, I read a book by an environmental activist named Rob Greenfield. And
he was like destined to be an environmental activist with a name like that.
With his Greenfield, right? Yeah. Exactly, right?
It's like, well, I know so what I'm doing with my life.
It is so true. Yeah, man. And he rode his bike across America and he was dumpster diving a lot of the way. And I read that book. And so I knew that was always going to be a backup option. I had no idea that, you know, once I started going, it was unbelievable how much food I was finding in the dumpsters behind grocery stores. But that kind of made me feel like I had a safety net. And also because my sign said biking across country, ran out of food, I thought that it was attracting extra curiosity too, because there was a certain percentage of people were like, oh, this dude's biking across the country. Like, what's his story? Right. And so I actually felt fairly confident when I left. And I just brought my tent, my sleeping bag, some camera gear, and like my cooking gear.
You start with no food. Tell us that first experience of getting food. Because on a bike tour, man, you get hungry fast because you're working hard.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know what's interesting, man? The first person I met, it was in Santa Cruz. So it was like 40 miles away from where I live, right? And I was getting hungry. And this person named Rodney, he gives me a couple dollars for some food, right? And I said, hey, do you have a story about when somebody helped you? And he's like, well, I want to share this with you, man. He goes, I learned this quote a long time ago through my childhood. He said, I don't give because I have a lot. I give because I know what it's like to have absolutely nothing, right? And it was really interesting to hear that quote from him, because he pretty much foreshadowed the entire like trip from there, because I started noticing when I would ride through like different neighborhoods, it was usually the people who had faced the most adversity in their lives. Like they were the people who were reaching out the most to me and wanting to help the most and the most concerned. So it's crazy because he just foreshadowed it.
Wow. I want to ask about that. What did the people around you think of this idea? Were you telling a lot of people beforehand? I know they probably knew that you had biked across the country already, so they knew you could do that. But with this difference that this trip was introducing.
Yeah. Great question, man. I mean, the majority of people by far, friends and family, were concerned about me for sure. And then there was a lot of doubt behind the idea. There was like, you're not going to be able to do that. You need to bring a crew with you, et cetera. You know, and just on that note, like, I appreciate their concern, but I think it's so true. Like our gut feeling, like listen to that gut feeling, because when I came up with this idea, it was the one thing that made the most sense to me ever in my whole life, where I was like, oh, this is just what I need to do this now. It just felt like it was time to do this. If that makes sense. And I think there's times in our lives when we have this like strong desire where we want to go on an adventure. But then again, that self-doubt creeps in, or there's people saying like, you're too old for that, or like, you can't do that, et cetera. And I would encourage just anybody listening just to like listen to your intuition, and because it speaks the most truth out of anything.
What was the first experience where you thought to yourself, I'm on the right track? Like all the doubters, or even myself, you know, it's like, no, that's wrong. I'm on the right track.
Yeah, I had a moment. So I had to cross the Great Basin Desert in Nevada, right? Yeah. And they call it the loneliest road in America. And the route that I took, it was like 350 miles across this two-lane highway. And there was like, I think there was four towns in between there. And on my last day in the desert, I kind of veered off route because I wanted to do this like three mountain pass route. So it's three mountain passes, 84 miles, no services. And so when I woke up that morning, I was like, had a certain level of intensity, right? And I wanted to challenge myself, right? And 35 miles away from the end of the route, I ran out of water. And this is in the desert, you know? And so I started to feel a little bit concerned. And then the road was just littered with like dead animals that like succumbed to the heat of the desert. So as I'm riding, I'm just like looking to the shoulder of the road, and like, oh, there's another dead cow that died of thirst out here. Like, oh man. But I'm sharing that story because, and also then I started getting a bloody nose because I was so dehydrated. So I started really questioning, you know, is it was the right choice to be out there? But once I finished that third mountain pass in the 84 miles and I was riding into a town, right, I felt like I did it, you know, like I did it. And that was the moment when, like, again, like, this is what I should be doing, because that was such a unique, unpredictable day that I had. Like, I'd never had a day like that before in my life. And after that crossing the desert, I thought, man, like, I have all of America to still cross. Like, who knows what's going to happen?
That is wild. And you made it. You know, those moments are no joke. I remember running out of water in the desert one time, and I was looking for bottles, like old bottles of water on the side of the road, just like anything. I don't even care right now. If there's liquid in there, I'm drinking it.
Yeah, regardless of what it is.
So, you know, what were you hoping to gain out of this experience? Like, you know, obviously you needed the kindness of strangers to literally survive. Right. What were you hoping to also learn?
Yeah, you know, I really wanted to connect with people, other Americans specifically, because a huge part of the reason I did this is because, you know, we've all been feeling that political division in the country for like the last 8 years, you know, and it was like, it really affects me, man. And like, I don't like the fact that it feels like we're very divided, right? And so I was hoping to gain like a much better understanding of like togetherness from the people that I met and after hearing their stories, et cetera. And that was a huge chunk of it, of the reason why I wanted to do it and what I wanted to learn from it.
By the way, when did you do this?
I actually did it in 2018. And then I spent a year in 2019 editing it. And then it came out 2 weeks before COVID. And then the film Nothing Happened for a year and a half with the movie. And then in late 2021, I got some film festivals started opening up. And then I got invited to a film festival in Utah. I drove 800 miles to Utah, and not one person was in the theater. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, like, I don't know if this movie is ever going to come out. You know, I think that this experience won't ever be shown. But then I just stayed consistent with getting in film festivals, et cetera, and then it started building momentum. And then eventually, you know, it's out now. But I remember feeling a bunch of self-doubt as far as if the story was ever going to be told, you know?
You went to a theater and it screened and no one was there?
800 miles for that, man.
Oh my gosh. What was that? How did that feel?
You know, I told myself, I was like, okay, this could be two things. Like, this could be the end of this film experiment, or this could just drive me even more, and it would be a great story once the film eventually comes out. And so thankfully it ended up being a good story. I think with not just the bike ride, but, you know, life in general, like, there's so many things at times when things feel like they may not work out. But I think if you just stay consistent with it, eventually things can work out.
Wow.
You know, and just don't quit. Just don't quit, man.
So you knew this was a good story.
Yeah, because based on all the experiences, man, like, I met so many different types of people, and including, like, you know, I was able to capture some really beautiful moments of kindness and compassion from homeless people. I mean, there was countless homeless people who ended up helping me, like, literally people who were living on the streets who would share their food stamps with me. You know, or like would share a couple dollars, and then they would tell me their perspective on like how they stay positive with their own lives, right? And so after experiencing all those things and witnessing that kindness, I knew, like, okay, there's a really special story here that I really hope to get out to the public, you know?
Let's take a quick message break and hear from the folks that help make this show possible. Are you looking to sell anything at all online? Well, I would advise you to look into Shopify. They are a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. I use Shopify every day at my day job. It has been with us since our company was a tiny little team all the way up to where we are today, one of the biggest breweries in the country. Whether you're auctioning off autographed apparel, selling sleek skis, or selling non-alcoholic beer like we are at Athletic Brewing, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their personal POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. We manage a podcast, a blog, all that right there on our Shopify store. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. and has extensive help resources for whenever you're dealing with an obstacle. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ASP, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ASP for Adventure Sports Podcast now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ASP.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
That is plenty of that for now. Let's get back into the episode.
Tell us about a day that was particularly challenging. That wasn't the Great Basin. That sounds like it could be a candidate for this, but like a day that it's like, I don't know if I can keep going, or maybe people weren't so kind. Like, is anything come to mind that where it was really kind of the crux of the experience?
Yeah, great question. I love that question. So I ended up spending 7 months on the road. I rode to New York and then rode back, right? And I wasn't planning on doing that, right? And so
you rode all the way back.
Yeah.
Holy cow. How did I miss that?
So yeah, man. And it wasn't planned, right? And so when I was in Montana coming back, right, this was month 6 on the road. And there was 3 consecutive nights of 13-degree weather at nighttime, right? And, like, I only had summer gear with me. So, literally, in my tent, I was wearing every single piece of clothing. And, like, I was concerned that I was going to get hypothermia, right? And sleeping in that super cold weather for those 3 nights, like, it sucked the strength out of me the rest of the bike ride. And for whatever reason, like, all my joints started aching the rest of the way. And, like, it was a real shock to my system. And I was in Oregon, along the Oregon coast, and I remember thinking, like, I think I'm done. Like, even though I'm only like 800 miles from home, I think I'm just going to stop here. And I was sitting on the side of the road, stretching my body, and I didn't have my sign out or anything. And this guy walks by and he's like, "Hey, man, you okay?" And I said, "Yeah, yeah, I'm fine. I'm just, my body's hurting a little bit." He's like, "Hold on a second, man. I'll be right back." This man runs across the store, or across the street to a grocery store, ends up coming back with a bag of groceries. Right. And he says, these groceries are for you. And I was like, "Dude, like, why'd you want to help me?" And he's like, "I could just feel your energy. I could feel that you were struggling and I wanted to help you." This man, his name was Gary. He was homeless. Like, he was a homeless man who used his food stamps to buy me a bag of groceries. And that was, like, literally in my lowest moment, he came into my path and, like, totally changed my life, man, and gave me the inspiration to keep going.
That's what you were out there to experience. And to
yes.
see and the beauty of humans. Well, yeah. Tell us, did your experiment, I mean, did you get out of it what you were hoping?
Oh, so much more than I ever could have imagined. Because, like we were saying, or, you know, in the first part of our conversation, like, once you leave on an adventure, you don't know what's going to happen. Like, there's no, there's no way to predict what's going to happen. And in moments like that, meeting Gary, like, I never would have thought about that. And absolutely, I mean, I felt way more connected to my fellow Americans than beforehand, especially because I was riding through places that I wouldn't normally go, you know. And like, I mean, I'm from, you know, the coast of California, where it's more like a lot of progressive people, et cetera. And I was riding in, you know, West Virginia and different places to where they have a much different way of thinking. But the cool thing was I was having the opportunity to talk to these people and see where they're coming from. So I felt like there wasn't nearly as much division between us that way.
What do you feel like you learned about America?
Yeah, I mean, my uncle always used this phrase, but there's more that brings us together than what separates us, right? And by that, I mean, like, because I was hearing these stories, and to be people, I mean, there was a lot of immigrants I met, like, you know, a lady from Nicaragua who welcomed me into her house, right? And she grew up speaking a different language. She grew up in a different culture. She grew up poor. Right. And she welcomed me into her house, and we had dinner together, and we started sharing stories. Right. And she shared stories about her husband who died of cancer when he was like 40 years old. Right. And I had, you know, my dad died of cancer you know, when I was younger. And so we bonded over that, right? And again, like in some ways it looked like we grew up in totally different scenarios, but after learning about her human experience, like we had shared human experiences. And that's an example of just, it showed me that like we all have a lot of the same shared human experiences.
So yeah, tell us some more stories about people showing kindness. What was maybe one of the most unexpected? Because I don't know, maybe you could almost start to tell who's going to help you out and who wouldn't. Was anyone really surprising?
You know what's interesting, man? I mean, I would say it kind of shed some light on my own like judgments of people. Because I think in general, I thought more like macho masculine guys just like don't have feelings and like wouldn't help, you know? But I remember being like in Kansas and like I was in this farm town in Kansas, and like one person walks up to me and gives me a couple dollars for some food. And I was, you know, super grateful for that. And then I see this guy from across the parking lot walking towards me, and he's dressed like all camo. And like, I think he's dipping, you know, he's spitting tobacco, and he walks up to me, big beard. He's like, that guy can just give you some money. And I remember thinking, like, I hesitated for a second because I thought he was going to have a problem with it or something. I was like, yeah, he gave me a couple of dollars. And then the guy, he's here, he starts to get tears in his eyes, and he says, that makes my heart warm, my heart warm that he helped you out. He's like, and I just remember thinking like, whoa, I didn't expect that. And it was really nice to see that.
Wow. That is unreal, man. So, you know, you talked about earlier too, that the people who have experienced need and hunger and want were often the ones that helped you out a lot. Were there any other like really unexpected like realizations like that? Who would help? That's a great story, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I think so. I mean, I started to really notice it seemed like tons of hardships. Like I noticed there was a lot of people who were like addicted to drugs who would come up and help. Like they had overcome their drug addiction, and that was like a common theme. It just seemed like. And it seemed like they were the most present too. Like when I would ask them a question about their life, like they would sit there for 10, 15 minutes and just share stories with me. And it seemed like, yeah. And, I think that stood out to me for sure, because again, my mother struggled with addiction and she ended up dying from it. Right. And so like hearing these stories from these people who overcame it was super inspiring. And also it was in some ways nice because I could relate. Okay, this person went through it as well, and you know, they were able to overcome it, which was super inspiring to hear.
Do you think that most people need hardship to be over, you know, be generous, be kind of a better version of themselves?
Man, such a great question, Mason. Honestly, man, the way that I look at life, I think that hardships are the most growth and possibility and the best things can come out of facing hardships, I think. I truly, truly believe that. And I think that it sucks really, really bad when you're going through it, but you have a couple options afterwards. You can say like, okay, I just want to be, you know, angry and bitter at the world the rest of my life. Or like, what did I learn from this? Like, what did this truly teach me? And what I learned from these people was, it seemed like it taught them compassion. That's what it seemed like, because they were hurting really bad at one point in their life, and it seemed like it gave them the desire to be a better person. So
wow, and it sounds like you have had hardship too. You just shared about your mom and dad just passing away younger than probably they should have. You know, so you have hardship, but you were also kind of putting yourself through this voluntary hardship. Is that like a role that adventure can play for people? Just I know for me, like. Yeah, my proudest moments, my like biggest growths have been voluntary adventures, you know, a lot of ways. Yes, I've had some hardship, but nothing like the people you're talking about in this story.
Yeah. Yeah, totally, man. And you know, it's for me, because I was feeling a lot of pain and sadness after the loss of my parents, like in some ways I wanted to channel that and like and use it. And if it makes any sense at all, it's like a sense of recklessness, but I mean that in a really good way. Like, I wouldn't have gone on this adventure, like, if it wasn't for losing them. You know what I mean? But, like, losing them, it made me see a perspective that I wasn't able to see when they were alive. And it made me realize, I don't know how long I'm going to be around for, right? And so I remember thinking, like, I really want to do something with my life right now that I've never done before. Because who's to say, I mean, I thought my dad was going to live to be 100, you know? And the fact that he died in his early 60s was like, well, shoot, maybe that might be me too. So that's kind of an example of, like, channeling, you know, some pain or whatever, you're some frustration you're going through, and like you can use it.
What, did anyone have a problem with what you were doing? Because, you know, the phrase I often hear, especially with bike tourers, and that's my adventure of choice, touring and bike packing. It is really true. Like 99% of people are amazing, but there's always that 1%, one or two times an adventure, and adventure this length, probably a couple times, that folks just have a problem with what you're doing for whatever reason. Did you have anything like that happen?
Yeah, for sure, man. Because I purposely grew up like a big beard because I wanted to see if it would change the way that people treated me. And so, like, without a doubt, like, as time went on and my appearance started to change, and I'd be standing out there in front of grocery stores with my sign, I was getting kicked out of those places way quicker than when I was clean cut. And like, I was getting harassed more by people. Like, people would be yelling things, throwing things sometimes. So, I mean, that did happen. And there's no question that as my appearance was changing, that was pushing people away. Like, people weren't as receptive when I would ask them questions. Even if somebody had something to give, it was kind of like, here's a couple dollars. And I'd start to ask them the question. They'd be like, no, thanks. Like, have a nice day. So that for sure was happening.
Did anybody ever pick up on the fact that you had your glasses that were recording? Did anyone ever say, what are those? Are those whatever? I don't even know what kind of glasses do that.
Yeah, you know, I think they were called Pivot Head Durango. They don't make them anymore. But there was one person, it was within the first week. It was like, yeah, and it was in Davis, California, in front of a grocery store. They said, those cameras, it was like a college student, so maybe they were used to seeing something, or maybe because it was the beginning, I was asking them a question that sounded scripted or something, because I was kind of figuring things out along the way as I went, you know? But literally, like, spoke to hundreds, if not thousands of people, and only one person noticed the camera glasses. Obviously, I also had them sign a waiver after. Everybody in the movie signed a waiver to be in it.
Got it. Okay. I was like, you know, I helped with some films at work, and I was like, you know, I don't know. You get in trouble doing that, I guess, you know,
yeah,
recording
exactly.
And not telling them, but to get that genuine reaction, you didn't want to say it beforehand. I totally agree with
yeah.
that. Yeah. Yeah. What, tell us about an example of someone that really showed kindness to you, or like a moment that was like, this is what I'm out here for. I mean, you've already shared a number of them, but was there one, you know, with 7 months of travel, I'm sure there are plenty that couldn't make the film. Was there one that's like really sticks out that won't be a spoiler?
Let's see here. One that stands out that wouldn't be a spoiler. Well, there was one, you know, so there was a woman I met in, towards the end, and she, I was standing in front of a grocery store, actually on the corner. And with my sign, and she came up and she had this little like brown bag, and she's like, this is for you. And I looked in it, and there was like toothpaste and like deodorant and a pair of socks and like some like a little bit of fruit and then a couple of dollars. And I was like, wait, like, so like, did you prepare this for me? Or she's like, no, I just have these prepared in my car and I hand them out. I was like, thank you so much. And I was like, what's your name? And she said, my name is Mama Starfish. I said, Mama Starfish. I was like, I love that name. She's like, do you know the story? I said, no, I don't know the story. She said, one day there was a young boy walking along the shore, along the ocean, and there was thousands of starfish that washed up on the shore. And so the little kid, he started throwing the starfish one by one in the ocean, back in the ocean. And then this old man walks up to him really bitter and says, what are you doing, kid? The kid said, I'm saving the starfish. And the old man looks at him and says, There's thousands of them. You're not going to make a difference. What are you doing? It's a waste of time. The kid picks up a starfish. He throws it in the ocean. And he says, made a difference to him. And I just love, she shared that story with me. And I thought it was such a great example of like, we think of change and just like it can be overwhelming with all the things that are happening in our world. But like we can make change starts on like a small level, right? And like literally like these individuals I came across, like, they changed my life, and it may have not seemed much like at the moment, but it totally did. And it was super impactful.
What's so cool is, you know, who's made a difference in the world? What's that quote? Like, you know, a small group of passionate people are the only thing that's ever changed the world. That's not like, you know, they believe they can change the world. That's not like a pipe dream. That's literally the only thing that ever has is.
Yeah.
One or two people or a small group saying, let's make a difference. And then, I mean, I can imagine that story saying, hey, this little boy goes out there all the time. You know what? group of volunteers goes, next thing you know, the whole town's out there, and all of a sudden all the starfish are saved. It's like, you don't know the ripple effects of what you do.
Exactly.
And you just got to do it. Like, you don't know what could happen. Even if nothing happens, even if it's just you, you're still making a difference to those starfish.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So it's worth the effort. That is awesome. So what was one of the strangest things somebody bought for you or somebody told you or gave you?
When I was in Colorado, a lot of people just gave me like weed.
Okay.
So that was kind of funny. Like,
it's pretty on brand.
Yeah, it happened pretty often. I love Colorado and I love people from Colorado, but like that was happening like pretty often out there, which I thought was kind of funny.
Where did you go through Colorado?
Man, I came through the southwest corner and towards like Durango, you know, and I rode up towards Gunnison, and man, there was some wildfires going on when I was there, so I was trying to escape the wildfires. And kind of a funny story, I was there was like it was starting to get to me, you know, breathing in that smoke from the wildfires. And so one night when I was camping, I was like, I can't keep sleeping out, you know. So I came across this football equipment shed behind this high school, and I slept in this football equipment shed. And I thought, oh, it's summertime, so it's fine. Like, I can sleep in a little bit. No one's going to care. And so I leave, like, at, like, 9 in the morning, you know, and I'm, like, I have my bike, all my bags loaded up and everything, and I'm walking out of the football equipment shed, and the high school football team was having practice right there. And everybody stopped the practice and just looked at me like, what the hell is this guy doing? Like, what was he doing in there? Did he sleep in that shed? Like, who is he? Like, what's going on here? They literally stopped. It was like a movie. They literally stopped the practice and just stared at me, you know? And I remember just thinking, like, I want to get out of here as quick as possible. This is so awkward.
Oh, so many moments like that. And you just want to say, like, I'm not crazy. I'm not, you know, like a lunatic. What was, you know, you'd done some traveling, some biking. Was there a place that was really exceptionally beautiful or just unexpectedly pretty?
Man, I mean, I got so there was a day in Montana in the Rocky Mountains. There was this mountain pass, takes you up to 11,000 feet, right? And I planned to ride across that, but that morning I heard this guy came up to me and told me, he's like, hey man, like, there's an Arctic cold front coming, and they're closing the mountain pass because it's, and they're closing it for winter because this was the first week of October. And he said, it's going to be closed for the rest of the winter. And so I had to decide. I was like, well, I can try to ride over the mountain pass real quick and get to the other side. But if I don't do the mountain pass, I got to do a 150-mile detour. So I thought, shoot, man, I'm going to try to ride over this mountain pass before the snowstorm comes. And dude, it was insane. Like, they closed the mountain pass. So I literally had, you know, 5,000 feet of climbing up to 11,000 feet. And there was zero people on the mountain pass. Like, literally no cars. That's a cyclist's dream. Unbelievable. And it took me all the way up to 11,000 feet. And like, it started snowing up there, and just, it was right in the middle of the Rocky Mountains, kind of close to Yellowstone. And I remember thinking, like, this is, and that by far was the greatest day of biking I've ever had in my life, to think, like, literally the entire mountain pass to myself.
Did you get down the pass before the storm?
Nah, man, the snowstorm. It's funny because I got to the top of the first peak and I saw this. Once it started snowing, and I sat there for 5 minutes and I thought, okay, what do I do? Like, because there was that adventure aspect of like, I want to keep going. But then the logical was like, if I get stuck up here, like, no one will find me until the spring. Like, I'll die. Like, there's no one, it's closed for the winter, you know? So I remember thinking, all right, like, I climbed, it took me 5 hours to get to the top, but I just ended up coming back the way I came. It was the right decision, obviously, but. And honestly, I wasn't too bummed just because the fact that I had the whole mountain pass to myself, I was just happy to be there. So I figured, okay, like, I got to take a 150-mile detour, but it's totally fine. Like, it was worth it, you know?
That's called being extremely positive, because I would have been mad as heck if I had to go down and then climb back up. So I guess you went another way.
Yeah, I went another way. And that's why I ended up meeting a guy who in Montana who gave me a place to stay for 3 nights. And I would have met him if, like, I didn't, you know, have to turn around. So it worked out.
Things work out. That is wild. Did you, you know, have any weird coincidences or anything? I almost feel like every time I put myself out there like this, I like see someone from home out in the middle of nowhere or some sort of random coincidence. Was there anything that was kind of trippy like that?
Yeah. You know, what's crazy, man, is I was welcomed in Pennsylvania in State College. These two guys welcoming their house, right? And they told me, He said, "Hey man, we want this house to represent a safe place for our neighbors and for everybody." They said, "Everybody's welcome here." And I remember they told me that, right? And then I stayed there for a night. Then I rode in New York City from there. And then after New York City, I did a little bit of hitchhiking, right? For like a couple of days. And this bus driver picked me up in New Jersey. And he said, "Oh, I'm going like, you know, 400 miles or whatever." He's like, "You can ride with me if you want." And I thought, cool. Like, all right, we'll go. And this bus driver ends up going, he was going to State College, the exact town that I met these guys. And then, so when he said State College, I thought, that sounds familiar. And then halfway through the bus ride, I thought, oh my God, this is where my friends, like my new friends live. And so he just literally dropped me off at their house and I just knocked on their door. Cause like they said, it's always a safe place to stay. And I was always welcome. It just worked out. Crazy.
That is wild. What's a lesson you maybe didn't expect to learn out there that you did?
Yeah, I think like, because as time went on, like the lifestyle did start getting really challenging as far as trying to find a safe place to sleep and place to bathe and, you know, like all that and just holding a sign in front of grocery stores, et cetera. And especially my appearance started changing, et cetera. But, you know, what those people taught me is like every day, like we all have this like super special opportunity to like show up for somebody. If that makes sense. And it's not just about giving food or money to somebody. I mean, just like, even if you sense that your coworker's energy is off, maybe you can just like come up to them and just check in with them, because there was people who did that to me along the way, you know, and even if they didn't have food or money to give, if they just said like, "Hey, have a nice day," or kind of like acknowledged me, and that like meant a lot, you know? And so I realized like, oh shoot, like that doesn't cost any money at all. Like we can all do that. Like we can all just show up for somebody and it may end up changing their life, you know?
So you really learned how a really, really small act can make a difference. Just saying hello, smiling at somebody.
Literally. Yeah, literally. Because again, like as my appearance was changing, it was starting to feel like I was kind of invisible out there, you know, and like I was receiving much less help. And so even just a smile and have a nice day like that, I'm like, okay, this person sees me. Like it literally made me feel better, you know?
Do you feel like your skills changed as far as like requesting money, the way you held your sign? Did you get like better at that? Like, okay, now I know what to look for. Now I know what to do a little bit more.
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, the first couple of weeks I was stopping in front of Trader Joe's. But the thing is with Trader Joe's grocery stores is it's more expensive groceries. So in general, you know, a little bit more wealthy people go there. And it felt like I was cheating because I was receiving a lot of help from there. So I actually started avoiding going to Trader Joe's, and I preferred to go into like other neighborhoods and places where there wasn't as much money, because I felt like there was more, first of all, interesting stories from them. And it felt more like of a genuine experience, because Trader Joe's, it seemed too easy. You know what I mean? And I didn't feel like I was getting what I wanted to out of the experience, if that makes sense.
What else did you think you learned about human nature, about the state of our country? Were there any misconceptions that you feel like were upended from this experience?
Yeah. I think human nature, I think I learned that like as a species, I think we have to stick together, you know, and we have, and that's why we've like lasted this long, right? And I think as far as the divisiveness, like, it's not, in my opinion, we're not nearly as divided as it seems. It's just like news stations, they want to focus on that stuff, you know, and they want to focus on the worst stories they can find, because that's what gets people to watch their shows. And that's what makes them money, right? There's that expression that goes, if it bleeds, it leads, for like, you know, for the media. So it's like, let's try to find the worst story. We'll start the news off with that to get people's attention, and we'll make money, right? But this experience taught me that there's not nearly as much division as, you know, the news media and the politicians are trying to make it seem like.
I always felt that no matter where I was in the world, people really treat you the same. And they're mostly after the same thing in life. They want to have a good life. They want to provide for their families. They want to get along with the people around them. And if they see someone in need, most people help. Most people want to help, even if they're not overly friendly. They might just be like, all right, here you go, here's what you need. Or most of the time they are super friendly. So you know, there's so much more connecting us than there isn't. And yeah, that's what your whole project was about. So what's cool about your story is that, yeah, that's not all that long ago. That was a time in that division was really, really prominent. And now we have this awesome film to kind of watch from your point of view. What should people expect watching the film? We are all in this together.
Thank you, man. Yeah. So I think that people are going to expect, first of all, an adventure. You know, there's a lot. There's the adventure aspect of the movie where, you know, you're crossing the country on a bicycle and you're stealth camping and dumpster diving and all of that. And I think that to expect to see a film that's, you know, there's a lot of hope for the future, and there's kindness and compassion and togetherness. I think that's what the film really shows. And
if there's one lesson that you think people you want to tell the world, if they can't watch the film, what would that be? Like, what's the one takeaway from your experience? 7,000 miles, 19 states. What's like, hey, here's what you need to know.
Just so many things are like really overwhelming in our world, like especially right now. And then it makes it feel like it's out of our control, right? But the one thing that we can control is just how we treat each other. And that's what the people on the road, they taught me that.
Anything else you want to share?
No, I just want to share, I'm super stoked to be on the podcast. And dude, you've inspired so many people, you know, with this podcast. And I'm just so happy to finally be speaking with you, because I was listening to you last summer when I was on my bike tour across Europe.
Well, tell us about that tour across Europe real quick, because I want to hear, like, and we weren't recording when you talked about your summers in Switzerland.
Yeah, so what I did was I flew into Milan, Italy, and I originally had a route planned. And the moment that I left on my bike from Milan, I just had this feeling of, like, I'm going to scrap that route, and I'm just going to start talking to locals, and then they're going to kind of dictate my route. So I speak a little bit of Italian, so when I came across different Italians, I'd say, hey, what are some good roads to ride on? And I spent 3 weeks traveling across northern Italy just based on what the locals were saying. Yeah, go down this road, you know. And I eventually ended up in the Dolomites. I rode the Italian Dolomites for a week, and then I crossed the Swiss Alps right on the bike. I spent 3 weeks crossing Switzerland, just so epic, the mountain passes out there, and jumping in rivers and stealth camping out there. And I stopped and worked on a farm for 6 weeks. I met a family 10 years ago, and I stay on their farm. It's a village of only 100 people. And we spend the summer making hay, you know, making cheese. And they don't speak any English or anything like that. And I speak a little bit of German, but it's enough, kind of, as far as the human connection aspect that we've been discussing. Even if you don't speak the language of someone, you kind of figure it out. You know, you use your hands to communicate, and just, you know, if you can pick up a word here or there, you make it work, right? And so I spent 6 weeks on that farm, and then I jumped back on the bike, and I realized, oh man, like, I have a flight that leaves from Amsterdam in 3 days. And I said, I'm not going to get a bike there. So what I did was I hitchhiked. I hitchhiked from Interlaken. I met this woman who, she was awesome. She was hiking in the Swiss Alps. That's what, and she was on her way back to Germany, and she had a van. So I spent 2 days hitchhiking with her across Germany, got dropped off near the border of the Netherlands, and then I had a day and a half to make it from there to the airport in the Netherlands, and then that was the summer.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for coming on, and we're checking out the podcast, coming on, telling your story. I'm going to point people to go watch it. It's Amazon Prime, Apple TV, Google Play. Like, it's won a ton of awards too. So, and it's still getting accolades. So congratulations on making the film. I'm sure that was an adventure itself. It sounds like it was.
Thank you so much, Mason. I really appreciate it, man.
First of all, thank you so much for listening. It means the world to us that you choose to listen to this show. If you'd like to help us further, you can leave a review on iTunes, share us with your friends, your family. It goes a long way to grow in the show. You can also support us financially through patreon.com/adventuresportspodcast. Link is in the show notes. And also, if you have an idea of who could be a good guest for the show, we're always looking for people to tell their story about the outdoors or adventure. So if you know someone, please reach out. Email us at info@adventuresportspodcast.com. And until then, get out there and have some fun.
What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.